only has a limited place, it's not spoke-based, and then actually the part where the engagement takes place is not, as you say, in the book itself, in your book, but in that discussion, which must be a transitory moving through, or a, you know, an afternoon event, or you know, whatever. How do you construct that? It seems like an ever narrowing number of engagements.
Yeah, we are really testing. I mean, the whole thing is just developed step by step, and the original place, which is quite interesting as well, is at the former Biome Shaw Library, and the library was under threat to be closed. Mm. So we had to do something. We couldn't allow this to happen, and obviously there was no money to buy new books. So this was triggering the idea to build up a new collection within the institution. Asking people to submit books or to submit copies of books. So I think this is interesting that this collection lives in the institution, but of course it's creating a problem as well. So that's an interesting aspect of it. And so the books sit in the reading room, and we are there one afternoon a week where people can access it, look at it. Mm. But then we take it also on tour and travel, and there we created these three reading rooms where people come in and look at the books, and I mean, it's always so great that through books you start these conversations, and through these conversations we learn so much about new projects and piracy. So I'm not sure whether it's narrowing down. Sure, the books are mostly just one-off copies, so they are not widely distributed. They have a life online because we catalog them, so you can look at all the projects which have short descriptions.
Can you leaf through the books?
No.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
To digitize them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The strain of it. And I just flashed in my mind the lovely notion that libraries would be places of reading rooms again. Our Outset Centre. Here,
this is
the library from hell.
It's not a library, is it?
What is it then?
It's the learning centre.
Yeah. Oh, right.
We had a beautiful library, I'm thinking back to the Biome Shaw Library that was closing down, and we lost a lot of books, we came here. And this, I'm thinking, a lot of my response is that an old knee-jerk reaction, what actually our library used to be. You know, the love of this place with the books, that really was a place to engage the books. And I think that's a losing thing anyway. So this is a very interesting recreation of a book, when you actively engage not only with the text, you know, you belong to the text when you're in the book, but to the object again, which is lost in these new learning centres.
Yeah.
So quite a curious engagement.
I've got a related question. There's an old-fashioned element to it. The first bit, if you take the ADSETS Learning Centre, as we have to call it, and you stray towards the back of the building, it just starts to look like an open-plan office, and you can
call spaces.
Yeah, it looks like a call centre. You're right. And it's funny when you see the new kind of working space models, like Google and things. They're basically old art school design studios. That's the basic idea of this kind of collaborative knowledge play spaces. Play is the buzzword, right? And these kind of Honda Toyota, they finance these play rooms where no one has a real job, and of course the project then is to capitalize play into R&D, right? And you have this amazing, you have to develop an output, right? So you get this kind of blurred spaces where no one's really clear what's going on. Like, it's really unclear what anyone does in that sense of learning. And then there's something in the way, there's the title of your projects, and this conjunction, and there's a kind of stutter, right? It's like and. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of things in lots of different directions. Mm-hmm. And the old-fashioned part of my question is, I'm wondering, when you present those kind of projects, like the legal assessment of your library, in an art gallery context, specifically gallery context, within the art context, specifically gallery context, are there ever question marks over where the work is or what it is? Obviously, your own work is very much like a research-led practice style, quite fluid, and observing stuff. But there's a clear object status to things like the found newspaper billboards and stuff, right? And it's a little less clear where the object of the work is in some of the collaboration.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering whether that's
my practice in the last year really shifted from producing objects to into a more discursive work and publishing as well. So I've always published because publishing was always so important for me to disseminate my idea beyond the art world and or the, let's say, the gallery art market context. But there's this Matthew Stadler, do you know, he is the founder of Publication Studio in Oregon, in Portland, and he has this really wonderful definition of publication, which is saying publishing is not just the publishing of a book, it's creating a public for which this book has a meaning. And I think this is the what I tried to say in the first part, that the, you know, the question where the audience is and how you create this
so
this conversation is really part of the work. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about that in relation to your kind of publishing and print on demand, because, you know, there's a sense in which you're building communities, and they seem like kind of quite different communities, although they're kind of related. But the print on demand, what kind of community are you kind of building there, or are you kind of shaping it in that way, or is it completely kind of open?
Oh, that's such an interesting question, and we haven't really solved it. But for the moment, we say it's completely open, so really anybody can publish through and public. Which is exciting, I think. Yeah. Everybody is kind of anxious about the quality and whether it can keep a kind of benchmark. But it's so interesting because Dexter Sinister from New York, they will do something through and public. So we have really interesting artists using the platform, and then it's really great to have students' projects as well. So it's a very wide kind of platform. And we are not shaping it in the way that we curate it, but we are shaping it in the way that we talk a lot to people and try to create some activity there, that people use it.
So the discussions around quality, that's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because then, you know, it's always fairly subjective.
Thing. Yes.
It's kind of a salon circumstance, right?
Right. Yeah,
you know, and it's interesting that the old salon circumstance would be, say, like you'd have the painting show, right? And so, okay, you might not be controlling what comes in, but everything's roughly got to be able to hang on the wall.
Yeah.
But now you have like everything's formatted into a codex form, codex book form, right? So there is a kind of standard format. I think it's quite. I wonder. There's something interesting about print on demand, just about the production flow of print on demand. That means it started to really carry an aesthetic that stems from basically desktop publishing.
Mm.
You know, it's the aesthetic that we all recognise as looking like a PDF kind of thing. In the kind, you know, and that's quite interesting because colour calibration and things like that are much less much more difficult. You can't spot check.
Yeah. Well, they are improving quickly.
Yeah.
There's not much different anymore when you go with a digital offset, for example.
Yeah.
But that's right. It's a very different way to. To experiment with the making of the book, and because you can do just, you know, you can do a print run of one copy. This means you just test something, and then, or you publish the first chapter when it's ready, and then in 2 months' time you publish the second. And so it's the whole idea of the book as a kind of finished object is kind of disappearing.
Isn't there a kind of a strange paradox in that this idea you could make a book through that or through any other process, through with other processes where you can digitally print or produce, and actually what we're doing is getting back to the unique object, which is kind of we're getting moving towards the limited edition or the maybe just two or three copies, which then become precious and special.
Who's going back?
Well, the idea that, you know, we're making a copy or a translation of a thing into another thing, so we're moving it on in a disseminating sort of way. But actually, we're taking a mass-produced object, which anyone can get hold of, and moving it into a unique object, which seems like a kind of a reverse. Well,
it's a slightly different condition, isn't it? Because you can just press print again.
Well, yeah. No, but I was thinking I bet some of the books in your library are kind of handmade translation, translated objects. They may be books, but they're
right. But this is really a condition of the Paris Library and of funding, and that you know, people are committing to produce the book, we don't pay them,
yeah.
and it's not published. It's not a published book, it's more
a thing, or a
process.
But I wonder if the book in general is moving back to more of a boutique item than a... It's moving back to the illuminated manuscript model.
Smaller, interesting question.
You know,
yeah.
Because Kindle's going to pick up a lot of the kind of mass-produced stuff.
There's a big move to self-publishing as well.
Yes, I think, I mean, the whole energy and the whole boost in producing printed material is really interesting, mm-hmm. and I wonder whether this is triggered through the e-book development. Yeah. But it's not only, I think, triggered because it's the opposite or it's a kind of old-fashioned thing you can touch. I think it's just because everybody has access to a printer now. It's so easy to print and to publish. And this is inspiring and motivating so many people to do it. And then all these fairs are shooting up everywhere, in Paris, in London, in Berlin, everywhere are the self-publishing fairs. And slowly platforms are built to distribute, because it's always the problem. There's so interesting self-published stuff, but where to distribute it? Where can you learn what's being published? And I think this is really the niche we found we really need to...
And does that then bring in, I mean, Jasper's question about quality, does that then bring, will there be a kind of, a, I mean, maybe there is, an emerging kind of hierarchy of criticism of people who act as gatekeepers and people who filter
stuff? There's this ongoing discussion bi-monthly, isn't there? Which is a kind of, I don't know, it's a sort of attack on... art was press, isn't it? Or the kind of notion of art publishing. It's a kind of ongoing debate they've had through the letter section, which sort of deals with these issues.
Can you tell us a bit about this?
Well, it's between a number of artists that are involved in kind of publishing, and I think they've kind of had this kind of ongoing sort of debate with kind of ideas of quality with regard to, I think they picked out one example of something that they thought held some quality, which was the, what's it called again, something David.
F.R.
David.
Oh, yes,
you.
Yeah,
so F.R. David is a kind of, you know, experimental publication involving artists' works, but they held this up as having some quality against a whole number of other things they thought were just completely meaningless. Mm. So that in a way they were doing a kind of, what would you say, a self-inspired, self-motivated critique.
Yeah.
Just like you might do some self-publishing.
The self-publishing. That's a great paradox, yes.
You know, it continued this kind of, and they sort of spiraled on like this. And I'm not sure where the debate's gone, it's just kind of carried on in different ways, and I don't know if they've found any solution or resolution to the... But it's an interesting question, I think, and it's something that's increasingly being kind of addressed.
Yeah.
In this context, you know, there's this whole... I mean, in the context of the kind of institution, there's this constant question about peer review, you know, which actually isn't a very good measure of quality. It's a measure of some idea of kind of... frameworks or formats, or
it's a measure of some qualities.
Mostly formal qualities, not conceptual qualities necessarily, because you know that's much harder to measure. So they're not going to measure that. But yeah, so that's kind of interesting, I think. So I mean, the thing about self-publishing that really interested me about what you were saying about this, like, for me, it's this kind of thing about the communities, right? But you know, how far you go in terms of eliciting. The projects or proposals, because I suspect that most of it is generated through conversations rather than people just turning up and saying, please publish my stuff, out of the blue.
Well, the process is not that people send us a proposal, the process is that they contact us and say they've got something to publish, and just learn the steps. They send it to Lulu, Lulu prints it, we put it in the website, and if you want to buy it, you just click the button. This is linked to Lulu, Lulu's printing it and shipping it to you. So we are not involved in the production, in the content, in the artwork. This is the process. And but your question was slightly different. The question was how and why do people want people to engage with the NPublic, I guess. And this is probably mainly created through conversations and through the framework, through a network this was built.
The function of some like a working method like that is also quite interesting in terms of where it's symptomatic of a lot of curatorial questions now, right? Where the kind of generally accepted position of there's a glut of overproduction. You know, someone like Mark Fisher, who last week would be heavy on that kind of position. There's basically too much already, and part of the ecology of curating now is actually curators become filters, like people who would sort of do a bit of the work for you to identify or distinguish quality or qualities, maybe things like differently better for different reasons, and it's so something like UbuWeb is a perfect example where there's nothing on UbuWeb that you couldn't find anywhere else online, but it just happens to be in one portal, if you like. And I guess NPublic provides something like that, right? Like where a kind of gateway space, but it's symptomatic of curating in its broadest sense, because it's basically like what Amazon Marketplace does or something. You know, it gives a one-stop shop, you know, where secondary sellers, you basically coordinate secondary sellers. Now, you're not doing it in the same commercial context, but that same idea of where curating becomes something like filtering, you know, sifting, if you like, is quite an interesting question to the arts generally.
Yeah, and also kind of making visible kind of networks. Mm. Is an interesting thing that it shares with something with curating there. That, you know, sometimes these, you know, what I've been calling kind of communities, I suppose, you know, networks that suddenly appear, you know, through these structures.
Mm. It's funny, you're talking about sort of Amazon and that and other places. There are analogs to those. What's the digital equivalent of that? And there are kind of similarities. Mm. You know, because people review books and they review things and they review hotels and they all these things, and this becomes these people are not professionals that are reviewing them, they're just people like us, and when enough people do it, we seem to sort of an element of trust is you know, and things can happen, and
it's like TripAdvisor, right?
Yeah, those sorts of things. Yeah. People sort of say, I went to this hotel and it was crap, you know, and then suddenly they, so in a way we're all, that's what Web 2.0 is asking us all to be, that gatekeeper, if we can be, but of course some people are more motivated to do it and some people can't be bothered, you know, and I wonder in this sort of there's producers and then there's consumers, or you know, users, or suppose they're consuming it, and if they're kind of they will rise in this kind of self-publishing or short-run publishing, a kind of a class of people in the middle somehow who kind of won't make anything, and they'll start to become experts in it, and I wonder if that's just a natural thing. I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing. It's just I wonder if it's beginning to happen, because it's been a few years now that things have, like Lulu's been going.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how these things operate.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, we were wondering when we go to fairs, we would like in the future we would like to take NPublic books with us, but they are not books we published. So Lynn has probably favorites, and I have different favorites. So how would we find a criteria which books we should take? So
few that, square inches.
Yeah,
in
so
table.
That's really interesting. Who makes decision, a quality decision. Mm. So we had the idea to invite for each fair a couple of people who select like 10 books, which we then take to the fairs in order to, you know, be, what's the word, to be just to everybody who published through NPublic. Because we don't want to just show the F.R. David things, the big names we know, everybody knows already. It's about the whole thing. Mm. So that's quite interesting. Yeah, and yeah, there might be kind of user-generated criticism.
So I would linking to that, then I would say that in a sense, the deepest question prompted by this kind of work and the stellar practice is effectively the question of responsibility. So if you take, because there's an ethical question that was prompted by a few of the questions from the audience, which is quite interesting, where in a sense your line, your way of working, your methodology, you have to, I don't know whether you have already or you have to at some point, start to establish between something like good piracy and bad piracy and things like that. But you have to start developing an ethical framework that, you know, maybe doesn't strip into you know, slip into to morality complexes or something, but an ethical framework for distinguishing, for, if you like, reconceptualizing these terms like piracy and stuff like that. And the real question then, you know, seems to press is you know, where does responsibility play? Like, what figures as responsibility in these new
And I think the big the big answer is the motivation. Really, why are you pirating?
Which is interesting because we get back to artistic intention. I think we're getting kicked out.
We do.
Yeah.
Thank you. One last thank you.
Thank you very much.